Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The following is a special KMOX news presentation. Now, here is Carol Daniel.
Last month, the St. Louis police chief told KMOX the number of felony charges issued by the circuit attorney was low compared to how many they asked her to issue. In a records request, KMOX got those numbers from police. The St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner has said those numbers are misleading and for the first time talks about why in this exclusive interview.
It's really funny how anyone can tell me about my office but me.
Gardner will not comment on numbers provided by police following a KMOX Sunshine request that show of 7,000 felony charges in 2019, 1,600 warrants were issued, and 2,700 refused.
I can't validate their numbers because their numbers is not my numbers. And so I'm not going to even speak to their numbers when I'm not going to.
So you give me the numbers that represent what you do.
And I'll probably do that later on when it's more appropriate. But right now, this is.
Can you tell me why it's not appropriate now?
Because we're starting off from a proposition of police numbers that I'm not going to combat that misinformation.
I want to swipe them off the table completely.
And I think we can later on, but I think this is not the proper form. I think right now is to say that the police numbers do not accurately determine the numbers that we review.
As a lawyer, as an entrepreneur, as a historic figure in the city, I want you to respond to whether it is the public who has misinformation. I would agree that there's misinformation or a lack of clarity. I want you to respond and say, this is what I do and this is how I do it, so that we can give them, the only way they're going to get clarity is from you.
Yeah, but when I agree that the only way they're going to get clarity is from me, so let's have a real conversation where you start off with a proposition of what I do, not discounting what I have said, that those numbers do not represent the work we do in our office. So that's the first clarity we need to have. When you discount what someone is saying, regardless of what they say 100 times, it doesn't. You can have all the numbers in the world, but are individuals in the media going to report the right thing? Because we've given people our numbers, and they don't report it. So that's why I want you to start from the preposition that we've done this. We've done this.
KMOX reporter Kevin Killeen and KMOX News Director Beth Conklin have requested figures from Gardner's public information head, Allison Hawk, on separate occasions.
KMOX does not even ask because they want to throw out one-sided
that we've been sending to Allison for weeks.
Well, but Allison just got here.
So we're talking about prior to Allison.
Because
you absolutely have. Beth has sent me emails in regards to this, and Kevin has also. And we've said
say that we have never asked.
This is the first time, but I know terms of.
Let's just say from like maybe years. It's maybe been years ago, but yes, no, and she we know.
And so I'm going to say this, that everything that's being reported about us not doing our job in this office is false. It's this weird environment we're in where we want to report false information. No, but we respond. We just don't get the actual response put into the article that we should.
I get it. For the just media, you know, information. So when I ask you for numbers and you say,
and I want to sit
this
down
is not an appropriate time, I just don't understand that.
But I want to sit down with you and I would love to sit down and we go through numbers because we can't just spout off numbers. I have to give you context of those numbers because that's the problem. No one has context of numbers.
We all agree to meet another time to pore over the numbers the circuit attorney's office says it is working on. Then the conversation turns to why some cases are refused and why numbers have increased for refusal for lack of evidence.
When I came into office, a lot of these new rules came into effect that put these unreasonable time deadlines on prosecutors, which caused us more problems, which we the ones that have the duty. We can't tell a judge, well, the police are still working on it. They'll say, that's your duty, case dismissed. And so we have to require more evidence. And I'm not saying that we didn't before this new rule, but it's really imperative because now we have a more connected community where we have more video, we have more internet stuff that we have to pull down. It takes time to get that. We have more, you know, cell phone information that crimes are being committed on. So it's a tech world that we are in the new century, but we still, the police department is working in the 18th century. So when you think that it's so easy for them to just get all this stuff together, it takes time because they also, this is not the only case they have. So I don't want to think that it's just, oh, they're not bringing over evidence. That is one reason, but it's also the requirements that we have in conjunction with a lot of these things. They have to get videotapes. They have to go to different departments and do all this stuff and turn it over.
Labs.
I mean, they don't even, for drug cases, they don't even have labs on the same day. So there's a lot of things internal to them that they have their own kind of hierarchy of what they do that controls how we do things.
Talk to me about the police exclusion list, because maybe on one hand it says from your office that the department is either corrupt or inept.
Now, what an exclusion list is like a braid list. Every prosecutor's office around this country for over 50 years has what's called a Brady list. Mine's just called an exclusion list. There's many different reasons you can be on an exclusion list. Credibility, under a pending investigation, or basically credibility issues in terms of manipulating any internal process in terms of presenting cases. So there's many different reasons, but it's about, you have to look at what the exclusion list really is. It's about when an officer has the ability to take a life or liberty of individuals. Your words mean something. And when you are determined not to be credible, if you're talking about how we hold individuals accountable, you cannot have individuals, regardless of whether they're witnesses or called a police officer, because they're witnesses. They're like everybody else. We have witnesses where we say we're not going to use them because they have a history of not being truthful. If somebody comes in and we have a repeated issue, we will not use that witness. Or we will not entertain that case based off of that witness because they have a repeated history of not telling the truth. We treat police officers the same. So this is nothing any different than what we've done before. We just call it the exclusion list because that's where you have to hold individuals accountable, regardless of whether they're a police officer or not. If they're not credible, we cannot use them to entertain a case or evaluate a case.
Are they able to get off of the list, and are they told that they are on the list?
We have a whole, currently I can't go into detail, but we have a whole process that I've worked with Public Safety Director Jimmy Edwards. We have a whole process of notification. We have a whole process of an investigation, and we have thoroughly documented that process to the media. My job is I'm not the employer of the police officers. I am one part. I take that to their higher ups, and their higher ups notification is their job. I don't have to talk to every police officer because that's not my job. I don't control the police department. So I think that's a bigger complex problem of, we have a process in place. I think you should ask the public safety director and the chief, why are officers saying they're not being notified? Because I'm going to simply say that's not true.
And what's the number one reason someone goes to prison? That answer is coming up. And why Kim Gardner says the system is broken and needs to be rebuilt.
We have victims that are victims today and they become perpetrators tomorrow, and they go in and out of this victimization continuum, and we do nothing.
This is a special KMOX News presentation. Once again, Carol Daniel.
Welcome back to my extended conversation with St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner. We were recently given an incredible amount of time with the circuit attorney, who has faced scrutiny over a variety of issues, including her use of diversion programs. She reacts to the lock them up mentality of the last century.
So you come into office, criminal justice reform is on the agenda. What was wrong with the system in your mind in St. Louis that needed to be fixed, and how successful do you think you have been?
Well, first of all, when you talk about criminal justice reform, we are talking about a system that has failed victims, failed communities around this country. And when you're a reform-minded prosecutor, you're not saying you're sacrificing the traditional system, but that traditional system that has caused harm, that's reserved for the most violent individuals. And still holding people accountable. It's about public safety and harm reduction. And we talk about reform, minor prosecutors. This conversation started in St. Louis during Ferguson, and now we're post-Ferguson. So we started the conversation of all the reform efforts, which led to reforming the system by way of the prosecutor's office, which that is a key part to the ecosystem of what how do we address violent crime in cities around this country? And so specifically in the city of St. Louis, you have to look at, we have failed policies, war on drugs, the term super predator, which is used to target, you know, right now we have what, 2.2 million people in the prison systems, and most of those individuals are black and brown individuals. And we have to look at, how have we made cities around this country? We incarcerate more people than I think China. So what are we doing that's been successful? If we say lock them up mentality, the tough on crime rhetoric that has caused these failed systems for 50, 60 years, or 100 years actually, and we have no success. Because St. Louis City, if you look at our city, we have been the tough on crime rhetoric for 100 years. But how has that made our city safe? Name me the year, I'm 44 years old, where St. Louis City has not been the most dangerous city in America. I don't know that time, but I'm not saying we can't get there, but we cannot continue to have the same one size fits all rhetoric. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So when I got into office, people elected me to reform a system that is not just broken, it needs to be rebuilt. And we have to, as reform-minded prosecutors are not saying we're not gonna hold people accountable. We're saying there's many different things we have to do to not only hold the individual accountable once they get into the system, we have to prevent the most violent incidences happening by being proactive. We have victims that are victims today and they become perpetrators tomorrow, and they go in and out of this victimization continuum and we do nothing. And so how we have been doing things for over 100 years has not shown results. So when you talk about changing a system, you have 100 years of things that need to be changed. And by no means are we saying in 3 years I've been here, is that gonna change? But we see the positive effects of alternative programs. We see the positive effects of how we hold individuals accountable. And that doesn't happen overnight. It's not gonna change overnight. So when I talk about success, success is not just in terms of holding people accountable. It's actually also saving individuals from going further in the criminal justice system. And that's where we as a community, we have to start having real conversations about how we address violent crime in our city. We have 1,295 police officers right now, and we have less than 300,000 people in the city of St. Louis. We have more police than most major cities. But has that made us safe? We have arrested more people than any other jurisdiction around this country. We try more cases than any other jurisdiction, even St. Louis County. Have we made our city safe? So if tough on crime rhetoric equals safer cities, St. Louis City should be the safest city in America. And we know that's not the case. So let's have a real conversation of what drives individuals to crime. It's addressing the root causes. And that's why a reform-minded prosecutor as myself, who is a registered nurse, I believe criminal justice and crime is a public health crisis. We have to deal with broken systems. It's like the emergency room. We have mental health and lack of access. We have broken educational systems. We have actual disinvestment and job loss or no job at all. And then we say, hey, criminal justice system, this is the only tool to solve the broken systems. But we have to basically address the root causes. And until we do that, it doesn't matter how many police you have on the street. It doesn't matter how many prosecutors you have prosecuting cases. You're not going to scratch the surface. And that's what we've been doing. And that's why a reform-minded prosecutor is saying, look, let's do something different. Crime is on a continuum. And we have to continue to move forward. And we have shown some success. But like I said, it's not going to happen overnight.
We want to talk about the redirect program. Do you feel successful?
Well, we talk about diversion programs. We have many different diversion programs. We have the first, we have the felony redirect program. We have a misdemeanor redirect program. We have the young offenders program. And we have the opioid drug education class program. Start with the opioid drug education program. In the city, in St. Louis, Missouri, we have no protections of these overriding of these prescriptions for pain medicine. And that's a problem. We're the only state out of, 49 other states do not have a prescription drug monitoring program. And we have a lot of individuals who are hooked on drugs because of legalized prescription medication. We have just as many murders. Actually, we have more opioid deaths than murders in the city of St. Louis. But we're not addressing that. And the only option that we have right now is to put someone in a jail cell. Being a registered nurse, we know that people who are drug seeking or addicted to certain types of drugs, putting them in a jail cell causes more harm to them, more death, and then they drug seek more, and they're more likely after they get released to have an overdose death. So what we're doing is we have worked with addiction-trained physicians, worked with Dr. Kanika Turner, worked with UMSL, and many other partners from St. Louis U Medical School. We created a evidence-based program based on them teaching addiction physicians, teaching a class, a four-week class, to address that addiction, to triage those individuals, one, to educating them how to help themselves or others when they spot signs of an overdose, as well as we give out Narcan. We give education of safe needles, safe, you know, how do you keep your family safe from, if you're using drugs, you may have a family member that sees you use drugs. How do you handle, you know, yourself and others? But we also triage that those individuals to community-based treatment. And what we found, that those individuals, one, they finish our class, and they're more likely to go further with medication-assisted treatment in the community. And it's been successful. We're the first prosecutor's office right now in the country that leads this cutting-edge training class for opioid addiction. That's never been done here. We're the only one in the state of Missouri. And we got $1.5 million recently to expand that type of program and to really look at how we can create a panel of experts, of how we have a commission that can look at a broader set of addiction issues in our community. So that's been successful. We also have a young offenders diversion program. It deals with the 17 to 25 year olds. Those are individuals whose brains are not developed. They make these rash decisions. They're also more likely to be victims of crime. So we're getting the individuals before they commit the more serious cases. We're getting them early, giving them trauma-informed counseling, cognitive behavior therapy. We're addressing in an individual way a risk score that tells them the likelihood that they'll go further in the system, at the same time, how they'll be victimized. So we are addressing that trauma early by bringing trauma-informed counselors inside our office, therapists inside our office. We do a lot of community service work with them. They have to pay back restitution 100% if there is restitution. So we are not just holding them accountable, but we actually making sure they get the services they needed so they can get out the system and never commit a crime again. So we are addressing the root causes in our own way. We look forward to trying to expand those programs because those programs not only prevent more serious violent crime, they actually help not the individual, but their families. And so we're dealing with an incarceration culture we created by bad policies of mass incarceration. The number one reason why individuals go to prison is not because they're sentenced to time. They're actually because of probation violations. And if you are a man or woman and you basically plead guilty, traditionally you get a suspended imposition of sentence, 5 years probation. You miss a court date or you drop dirty for marijuana. You're eventually, 80% of those individuals will be revoked by the judge and they will be sent to jail. And that is the number one reason why individuals go to prison. Probation violation. So when we talk about mass incarceration, it's not individuals pleading guilty. It's actually low-level offenders more represented in prison because of probation violations. And we have to address that. And that prison stint causes more harm, more trauma. It breaks up families. And that causes trauma that those families now are dealing with the cycle of victimization because of how their loved one is dealt with in the system. And in Missouri, women, females, are the growing prison population that we're seeing that we have to address. And we're working with experts to create a diversion program specifically tailored to females because in the criminal justice system, the system was designed for men. It was not designed for females. So when a female goes to prison, it is a guarantee that not only does she's affected, but everyone in her family goes behind her because usually females are the head of household. And so we have to address how, and they're usually committing crimes for drug, you know, addiction, financial, lack of financial access because they're usually the head of household, need resources. So these are financial and addiction crimes. And, you know, of course they have some outliers when women commit serious violent crimes, but that's not saying we don't deal with them and hold them accountable. We have individuals who are low level, men and women, that we're dealing with. And that's mostly represented in the criminal justice system.
When we return, the circuit attorney's relationship with the St. Louis Police Department. Then before the end of the hour.
No one wants to hear the victim's voice of how she was dumped by someone who at the time was not the governor.
We talk Eric Greitens and why Kim Gardner says she will run again.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is a special KMOX News presentation. Once again, Carol Daniel.
Earlier this hour, we discussed the numbers of felony charges that KMOX obtained from the police department through a Sunshine request, cases they say they brought to the prosecutor's office. I asked St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner about the relationship her office has with the police department.
It's always going to be an adversary relationship. I mean, we're going to always ask them to go back to complete their investigation, do more things. That is our job. We're a check and balance. They're the investigative body for us. We are the ones that review the arrests that they believe at the time, and they refer what's called charges. When they refer charges, we evaluate whether those charges are appropriate. Sometimes they are, they're not. So we're that extra step, that check and balance of what we can and can't do under the laws of the state of Missouri. And I think that people have focus on one part, very small part, the investigative body, and may then be the only part of the whole criminal justice system, and the whole conversation is guided by the police, but the police is only there for the prosecutor to review cases and charges, and we are that lawyer that have to review those charges. And because the police may feel it should be something, they're not lawyers. They don't have a law degree and policing, investigative, training. They only understand the laws based on arrest, and then they bring it to us, who are the lawyers, who evaluate whether that is happening or we can charge under the laws of the state of Missouri, proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Is there any manner in which your office is working with them to do a better job? Or
yeah, of course, we go and work with them through Captain Ron Johnson to develop a checklist, which we're working to create a checklist and kind of explain to them these new discovery rules, like we said, working with training them in terms of what we need, as well as we also go to the academy and speak. My chief warrant officer goes to the academy and speaks about the new laws, the new changes, and why we need certain things. We do that all the time, and we've been doing it prior to us taking office. So that has always been this constant kind of conversations that no one hears about. We do that, but we also have to understand we have a check and balance type of relationship. I can't tell the police what to put in a police report, because that's actually like unlawful and unethical. Because as lawyers, we have something called a bar license, that if we say do this and put this in here, we're not on the scene. A police report is a summary of what the police observed investigating that scene. So they investigate by interviewing witnesses and victims, and even that police report is not evidence, but it's still a summary that we need to evaluate whether a charge is appropriate under the laws of the state of Missouri. So I think we have to also keep intact that we're under ethical guidelines, that we can't just tell the police what they need to do to make a case. That's actually unethical and unlawful. We can educate in general, but they have a whole academy and 30 years of experience that they've been used to writing police reports, that they should have some kind of infrastructure in place that they can train. And if they want our help, we are gladly to continue to work with them. But I think that it's become this conversation of we need to tell them how to do their job. And that's not my job. My job, I can only control what I do. And that's why I educate my individual lawyers. And of course, sometimes I'm not saying that we may have gotten it wrong and we have to reevaluate a case. They always know if they don't agree with something, they go take it up to our chief warrant officer, who, if it's to the level they need to take it to me, we of course review any decision our individual prosecutors make in the warrant office. And we have done that. Even victims and witnesses call us and say, hey, I just wanted to know why this wasn't. And I will personally bring them to my office and explain to them why I could or could not do something and some of the challenges. We do that all the time. No one reports that, because that is the job of a prosecutor. We have to explain our decision. But what we don't understand is a prosecutor's discretion is the most sacred under this role of the prosecutor. Minister of Justice, it does not say, it's the duty of a prosecutor is to pursue justice, not merely convictions. What we've gotten is the imbalance where we are guided by conviction, and our duty, our ethical duty as the elected prosecutor, that is not what we can be guided by. But the whole conversation in criminal justice system is how many convictions. That conviction rate means nothing. It's about justice. And sometimes justice means you're not issuing a case. Sometimes justice means putting that person in an alternative program. Sometimes justice means amending that charge down to something that's appropriate under the law and the facts of that case, even regardless of whether the victims are mad or the community is mad. Sometimes justice is choosing not to do something that everyone thinks that they should do. But that's where I think the conversation, I don't hear that conversation, because prosecutors are never given the platform of the complexity of our job as being the elected prosecutor and what we do, who we charge, what we charge, and when we charge is crucial to that discretion. And what we've seen in this period of time, when you have reform-minded black female prosecutors leading these offices in major cities, that discretion somehow now, who's existed 200 years, is now the most sacred. But when we get in office, now everybody and their mama wanna tell us how to do our job. And ain't nobody got a piece of law license. No one's worked and lived, and no one's accountable. And one thing people have to understand, when people talk about, well, everything needs to go to the Attorney General, everything needs to go to the feds, the only person accountable to the public is Kim Gardner. The mayor is elected. She appointed the public safety director, and she appoints the chief of police. I'm the only one elected. I'm the chief law enforcement officer in the city of St. Louis. So when the circuit attorney, who is elected by the people and not in these conversations of how to combat violent crime in our city, right there, you're starting from a false sense of proposition that the police can only arrest you for 24 hours and hold you. It's the prosecutor that holds you accountable. And if you are not in those conversations, regardless of any time, a type of conversation about crime in the city, that's the problem we have. And that's why this conversation in terms of what my men and women in my office are doing is so disheartening, because they feel that. That's like we saying the police ought never do their job. Those men and women we work with every day, the good working men and women work hard. And they're always scrutinized and saying they don't do their job. That's the same thing that happens in my office. You got a thankless, low-paying job, and individuals have six-figure debt, and they work here and they getting criticized and, oh, you don't do this, you don't do that, you don't do this, and they make $50,000. And then you wonder why people leave. It's because they can go 1 year here is 5 years anywhere else. No one in the state of Missouri tries more cases than us. Even going to the county, no one tries more cases than us. Our average cases we try is 132 cases. 1 year here is 5 years. We like, I don't know what dog years are. Being here is like dog years. And so when you talk about people live here for a year and all they're handling these cases, well, this jurisdiction tries more cases. You have more experience. You jumped in the fire faster than any other jurisdiction. And that person is more marketable anywhere in the country because they're coming from this office. So you're gonna have turnover. You're gonna have people coming in and going on. And that's where this is the training ground for most people, even the people that criticize the office. And you can ask them how long they've been there. They've been there 2 years, some have been there 4 years, but that 4 years is like 20 years somewhere else.
Are you running? Are you going to?
Of course. Look forward to running. I look forward to people, you know, if they elect me or not, I appreciate and I'm humbled by the opportunity to serve. But I know that the people know I have a lot of work to do and they want me to continue. So, you know, I look forward to running again. I look forward to being about the community. I look forward to being, you know, having these conversations of accountability, because these are the conversations that I agree that we have to have, the tough conversations. By no means am I asking anyone to say Kim Gardner has done everything perfect. Kim Gardner is, I'm a human being, and I didn't get a perfect office, nor did I get perfect systems within this office, or perfect infrastructure within this office, or perfect problems that have existed before me. I hear a lot of stuff. Yes, we need to fix it. Yes, we do. Yes, we need to do a lot of things. Yes, we do. But we're doing those things and we're doing them with success. You may not hear about it. What I hear is the community. Go out to the community and see it's more people who support the prosecutor than support the police. And I'm telling you, I'm like, I'm the prosecutor. I'm the one sending people away to long periods of time. And you know what people tell me? All we want is somebody to be fair. Long as you fair, regardless of you sending a loved one away, I just want my loved one to have a fair process. That's all people want. They don't, of course no one wants to send someone away to prison. But they know if you've done something that caused harm to the community, or you a crime driver, we're going to hold you accountable.
As we wrap up an hour with Kim Gardner, remember, you can hit the rewind button and listen to something you may have missed or share a segment with someone on the radio.com app. You're a crooked lowlife N-word. When we return, threats, safety, and admitting that St. Louis has a problem.
This is a special KMOX News presentation. Once again, Carol Daniel.
They need to lock your crooked, lying up. You are a crooked lowlife and always will be ugly too.
That is me reading a handwritten letter that was mailed to the office of the circuit attorney just the day before our interview with Kim Gardner.
And then we had a lady who tried to get into the courts that basically had went to a bond reduction hearing. And because of this misguided information spouted off by Jeff Reuter, who's the, I guess he's the chief statistician and criminal justice kind of, I don't know what you call him. I call him Lion's Head. That's what he really is. Because every time his mouth is moving, it's a lie. Nothing. You got to fact check everything. Even the is wrong. It's probably something else. But this lady started saying that because her son got out, which I said, well, is this a bond reduction hearing? Which that's controlled by the courts. That's not us. Because she know I'm not doing my job. So she wants to come up and beat my ass.
Gardner says she is a frequent target of racism and sexism. She also gets racist notes left on her car at the circuit attorney's office. They have increased security, but Kim Gardner says not out of fear, out of apprehension.
Now that we have a reform-minded female African-American prosecutor, and I use race because race and gender is important. Now everybody can do my job. Everybody knows better than me what I'm doing. Everybody knows better than me how my people are performing. Everybody. But I asked people when I was in Jeff City, when they're trying to create these a concurrent jurisdiction for the AGs, I said, have you ever been in the city of St. Louis? Have you ever worked inside the circuit attorney's office? And it was funny how they looked at me and it was like, well, we just want to be smart on crime, not just tough on crime. And that's the discount. I've been saying that the whole time. I'm like the four-headed unicorn. I say the same things and then they're telling me, well, we need somebody else knows better for you and your discretion. But you're not doing this for no other jurisdiction. And no one is saying, what is the problem? What's the difference? I know the difference. We all know the difference around this room. The difference is someone elected Kim Gardner in the city of St. Louis to make the changes of the status against the status quo. The status quo and the powerful few have decided that they don't want that change. And they're going to, by any means necessary, stop the will of the people. And that's why that suit is important. That's why that suit is valid. That's why we have to fight for the people. This is not fighting for Kim Gardner, because I laugh when people say, well, this is because you are an embattled prosecutor that's all this stuff. It's funny how everybody wants to judge me by one case. And we entertain 13,000 cases a year, but I'm judged by one case because a person happened to be a former governor, happened to take his mistress in the city of St. Louis in a basement while she's undressed. But we don't talk about that victim who was credible, who everybody says credible, even the House said was credible, said our story was valid. No one talks about that. No one wants to hear the victim's voice of how she was done by someone who at the time was not the governor, but a prosecutor did her job because it happened in her jurisdiction. And instead of shirking the duties and saying, oh, because it's who it is and their status in the community, you hold them accountable like everybody else. I'm criticized by that one decision. Then, oh, by the way, we gave the biggest diversion program to the former governor. So I believe in an alternative so great that I gave him, that governor, that former governor, we like to talk about the biggest diversion ever in the state of Missouri. But no one's going to say that.
And as we wrap up our conversation, we look to solutions and what the circuit attorney believes the first step should be.
First step is to admit that it's a problem. I mean, no one wants to admit that there's a problem. We mm-hmm. always like to say the quick, we need more black police officers. But I tell you, when I'm talking about the divisiveness and the rhetoric, it's from black and white police officers. This is not one group. I think a lot of misconception. It's the small few of individuals that have decided to be the problem. And just like it's a small few individuals that we judge the whole city of St. Louis on. And we have to admit there's a problem. So we have to change the culture within the police department where they're held accountable for things like a false police report, where how they treat individuals in the community. Because those slights, everybody wants to talk about the big stuff when somebody gets shot. It's a lot of slights mm-hmm. that happen every day that no one likes to talk to. And then when you report it, they brush it under the rug and say, that's just the police doing their job. We've given one part of the criminal justice system this unbridled kind of gravitas that they have no checks and balance. And the community is tired of that. And so until you treat people like they should be treated, regardless of your occupation, that's all the community wants. The community wants to be treated fair and treated with respect. And also talk to individuals in a way that's appropriate. I'm not saying that people in the community talk to them in a way, but we don't have to always escalate. They're trained to de-escalate something. We need to de-escalate stuff. I get cussed out every day. I have people come to my office and I let them, because I know they're hurting. Mm-hmm. I know their pain. I know they lost someone. And I let them vent. Of course, it's not great. I don't like it. But I let them do it because I know if I was sitting there in their shoes, I'd be doing the same thing. So I understand that.
Do you think that, you said if they could just recognize that there's a problem, do you think they know there's a problem and want to ignore it? Or do you think they know that's the way it is and that's how they like it?
I think they ignore it because you have to change the culture. When I told you that the top brass, you got over 100 years of experience and you're 100 years of a grand of keeping it the same way. Until they really deal with race issues and how we treat the community in the police department, mm-hmm. we're going to continue to have lack of trust with the whole criminal justice system. And their job affects the whole continuum of the ecosystem. And so when we don't have witnesses, it doesn't matter if it's the worst case in history. We can't issue that case. It doesn't matter if it even happens on video. We can't issue it. And that's what people don't understand. And so we have to have a real conversation. We have to understand that there is a fear of law enforcement to certain groups. And it's actually, they have a good point. And we have to have like-minded people come together and have tough conversations. And it's all people. It's not just black people talking to black people. It's white people. Because what we have is we have groups of people that don't have to even associate with each other. Don't have to understand what individuals in the community go through every day. We have kids that are not eating, don't have a place to sleep, don't have nothing. And then we say, why are they acting up? They hate the world because they don't have anybody to help them. And then we want to pay attention to them when they're suspended or they considered a bad kid or they drop out of school and now they standing on the corner. And that's when we pay attention to them. But we didn't pay attention to them when that kid was in that classroom suffering and everybody, they raising their hand needing help. We always want to pay attention after the fact. We are reactive. And until the criminal justice system is beyond being reactive, that's how we build trust. If we have police, we have to continue to have police, not just live in our community, understand the community. Because you can live in a community and not have a connection to the community. Understand the community. Sit down with the community. Let them tell you how you make them feel, regardless of your feelings to get hurt. Hear that pain and anger. Hear those stories that I hear every day of what happened. See why they won't come forward. Understand that we got so many issues to deal with and as many different layers, but let's start with the most basic layer. Am I my brother's keeper? Do I consider everyone a human being? And it's a lot of people who feel invisible. And you cannot make people feel invisible. And that's what we've done in the criminal justice system. We have made groups of individuals feel like they're invisible. And that's the dehumanization that is so dangerous. And that's why it's so dangerous for the first African-American prosecutor, because I have people who don't even know me call me Kim. Kim, they don't know me. But they feel just this entitlement that my title does not mean nothing. I don't require it. Just say Mrs. Gardner. You don't have to say Circuit Attorney Gardner, but it's that dehumanization, that invisibleness that is a problem with certain groups. They feel invisible. They feel like no one cares. And it doesn't matter if you have a black police officer come to them or a white police officer come to them. They have so much layers of mistrust that until we sit down and just have that a conversation to let them vent and not talk at them, listen.
You can hear this complete hour and more of our conversation with St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner right now at KMOX.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.